This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek show number 654 with Gavin Campbell, recorded on July 31st, 2025. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all through the Average Tech Guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a sweltering, although, Gavin, we had a thunderstorm come through the other night, maybe two nights ago, brought temperatures back down to something reasonable. Everybody's like, oh, this summer's over. It's not, though, right? We know it's not, right? How are things in your neck of the woods?
It was hot last week, like really hot. If you were outside, you had a fan, it was just blowing hot air on you. All it's doing is moving the air, right? But today it finally, like, it broke, cooled down to a really nice temperature over the next couple of days, and then it's going to get warm again. But the weather this year, I just find, has been really weird. Like, all these random rainstorms and thunderstorms just rolling in out of nowhere, and then they go by. It's just been constant that, and then it just gets really hot. So I don't know what's up with the weather.
That oppressive hot. Like, you go outside and you just go, you audibly go, oh, this is terrible, right? You're like, why do I live in the Midwest? Or, you're kind of in the upper East Coast. Why do I live here? And then, but it doesn't last forever, right?
No.
I mean, it's we have box fans on our deck that you can turn on. You know, the shed is my shed is air conditioned. I'm actually running some wiring in the garage right now. I'm going to install an air conditioner in the garage, not a mini split, but just like a regular air conditioner.
Yeah.
It's unconditioned space and we don't need it all the time. So it's one of those kinds of things like, yeah, I got an extra one. I'll put a window unit in there to kind of, and it'll help the house overall.
Yep.
So all these things that you do to try and stay cool at the end of the day, just stay inside.
Right. In the end of the day, like, you still walk into your house, you're like, oh, it's so cold in here. Nice.
Good to have you on the show. We'll remind folks, we'll post this show with some world-class show notes, and there will be some good show notes tonight. Gavin's given me some good links out at theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. If you're on that team, thank you. Appreciate your support of the network. We're going to talk a little bit about the solar project from last week. I'll give you an update here before we get kicked in here. But you guys help with that. If you want to join the team and add to the value of the podcast, theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. And then a big thanks. Many of you have been headed out to the affiliate pass through on the site. Go out to theaverageguy.tv, upper right-hand corner. You'll see a red, this site is, Amazon, blah, 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 whatever it says. Click through that. You don't need to do nothing else. Many of you have been doing that. Appreciate it. And of course, that supports the network as well. Okay, Gavin, you're a friend of the show. You listen all the time. Last week, I spent some time talking about the solar project that I was putting together. Two 100-watt eco-worthy panels, 18-volt by facial. And the whole goal of those, and wiring and snippet, gadgets that you need, I probably spent $200 just in equipment to be able to run these $100 solar panels for now. Now, the goal is maybe to run a few more. But in the whole point of the discussion was to bring these panels in and plug them into the Blue Eddy solar generator that I have. And I had been told by a couple influencers on YouTube that it had solar priority. So if you plug it in and it's running, it'll take the power first from the solar and then next from the grid and then use the battery if it had neither, right? That's totally not true. By the way,
on your model.
Actually, I reached out to Blue Eddy, their support, and said, hey, how come this isn't working this way? I got the panels set up. I got energy coming in. I was trying to test these panels. We had clouds for 3 days.
Of course.
Yeah. I got everything set up and wired, and then I couldn't get any sun. Finally, on Sunday, we got some sun. Started getting some power and I couldn't figure out. I was monitoring their, I have a Bluetooth connection to it through my mobile app. And I have a Android tablet here that I use for most of the dashboarding of that. But the solar power was there. It was seeing it, but it wasn't applying it. I'm like, what's going on? I'm trying all these different things, unplugging it, plugging it in, switching the, you know, things on and off, checking the panels, whatever. So what I came to find out, and the reason I'm saying this is I don't want you guys to listen to last week's show and follow my advice from last week's show or what I was doing. The Blue Eddy, and actually many of those, I shouldn't say many, some of those solar generators don't have what's true solar priority, which other means the solar comes in, that gets used first, whether it's for the current energy that's being needed or for the batteries, right? Some folks, it's just an expensive unit to get. You have to basically get a pretty good controller to be able to do all that. That's not what I was hoping for. I was kind of hoping I could kind of rig this thing up. But it, in its current phase, if it's below 99%, 99% or below, so, you know, it will take from solar first. That's what they mean by solar priority. And then it takes from the grid to charge it back up. I've unplugged it from the wall, let it go down to 30 or 20% and let the charge go in. I don't have enough of a charge coming in on solar for it to truly recharge it. So solar's coming in, grid is coming in, it recharges it, gets to 100, stops using the solar and just pulls everything from the grid. So if I led you to believe last week that at that point, at the 100% point, it would pull from the grid, it would pull from solar or PV first, not true. I just want to be really clear about that. Contacted Blue Eddy, sent him a nice email. They sent me a nice one back and said, yeah, that's the way it is. Sorry that you believed the other way. And I said, well, okay, it's no worries. I didn't buy it thinking it would do this. I thought maybe after a while it would. Then I said, do you have a trade-in program and do you have one that does? Like, you know, and they said, yes, we have a trade-in program. No, we don't have one that does. That's a fairly significant MPPT controller for solar. And they're just not putting that expense into these pretty inexpensive solar generators at this point. So just be aware of that as you were listening to my words last week. Gavin, the timing is perfect for you being on here, though, because it presents a new problem to me. Uh-oh. I was thinking, okay, right, if I can't do it that way, maybe I can home assistant this thing and figure out a way to rig it. So in this case, it only pulls in solar when it's charging. So say during the day, sun comes up, I turn off, I have a Tappo, we talked about this, I think it's an H115. It's basically just an automated outlet, right? Plug it in, get access to it through the Tappo app. I can turn it on and off. It measures the power that's coming in. So when the sun is up, I wanted to say, hey, Tappo, turn off. And then I wanted something to monitor the Blue Eddy that says, hey, when that charge gets down to, I don't know, what's safe, 10%, do you think, 15, 20%, maybe something along those lines, then turn the Tappo back on, and the whole time it'll be pulling in solar power while it's working its way down. Then when it's coming back up, it'll pull in solar power and use that as well as the grid. So I would technically use less grid. But does this sound realistic for me? Like in the hackable home assistant space, do you think I could hack this thing at all? I mean, what do you need to do, do you think?
More than likely you can, and more than likely you have all the pieces you need for this, right? So Blue Eddy is Bluetooth, and I know you have a Bluetooth receiver, transmitter, because you're using it with your Govi stuff, right? So there's a plugin for Home Assistant that somebody developed for Blue Eddy specifically, right? Now, to install it, you have to install it through what they call hacks on Home Assistant. And for those that are not familiar, it's the Home Assistant Community Store. It's where a bunch of people that develop their own plugins can put it in there easily. And it's not officially supported by Home Assistant. You know, you get community support in their forums and stuff like that. And it's really easy to install stuff from there. You just go in, search, you click download, it's installed. It's pretty much then you configure it from there. So I saw there's a Blue Yeti one in there. Now, it looks like your Blue Eddy one, your model is actually supported by this plugin.
It's so that's a good sign. 180, just for folks listening. That's the model I have.
So that's a good sign. And yeah, I don't know what basic, it just says it gets basic data. I don't know what's more basic than the battery level. So we'll see. You could you more than likely would get that, and you can now work with that. And you can say, at this time, turn off the plug and then, you know, let it go. And then when the battery reaches 30, you just say, turn back on the plug. Hopefully it reports battery in real time or something usable. Like even if it's every 5-10 minutes, that's fine too, right? But these are all things that you will learn as you play with this too. Like,
do I need an intermittent, you know, something in between to be monitoring both the Blue Eddy levels and then tell the TAPO to turn off or turn on? Is there something I need? Is there another thing in between those two, or how do I get that integration to work?
So you'll probably do is create an automation in Home Assistant.
Okay.
And then the automation, your trigger will be, you know, for example, to have it turn back on, you can have the trigger be when the battery level drops below 30, then execute this.
Yeah.
Right. And then your trigger to turn the switch off is usually maybe a time of day or something like that. You would have it trigger that, turn the switch off now, for example. Right.
Yeah.
So it's just an automation. Okay. Once you get the data in there, you can do whatever you want.
Okay.
Right. I mean, you can even go wilder if you want. Like if you, there are hacks integrations that people wrote that you put your GPS location in and it will look at the sun angle, angle of the sun to your house. Now where they mainly use this, and I was going to play with this a bit, but I ended up just closing my blinds, but with blinds, right?
Yeah.
So you can have this integration will calculate the angle of the sun coming into your house and you can have it adjust the blinds as the sun goes a certain way. Right. So the sun's not hitting your floor or whatever like that. Right. So you could use that probably with the Blue Eddy to say if the angle of the sun is between here, then I know it's hitting my panels. And then as the angle comes over here, if you have a tree in the way or something like that, then you know it's not going to be hitting your panels.
Yeah.
And you can work with it like that too. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that.
There's some ideas for you.
Yeah. I like that one a lot. It also gets me thinking about weather. And saying if it's a cloudy day, just don't run the integration, right?
Until you can put brightness sensor, like my EcoWit gateway, for example, my EcoWit solar station will tell me how bright it is outside.
Yeah.
So if that's sitting next to it, it will know.
I like that. What if I got a Wi-Fi enabled voltmeter, basically is what it is, watt meter, let's say, that's on the other side. So as it's coming in, it's measuring the wattage of the panels and then say, hey, only run this routine if the watts are at, let's say, 60 watts or above. Then now everything can start working. Then now go to the TAPO, turn it off, because that would mean sun is on those panels. And if it's not measuring 60 watts, let's say, then it just always turns the TAPO on, so it's always feeding from the grid. You could kind of, I think you could probably do something like, so I might want to check with Home Assistant to see, okay, what voltmeters or watt meters, whatever it is, are compatible. Cause I would need to get one that has MC4 connectors on it. I can't just use a kilowatt meter. This doesn't have plugins, right? I need one that is in line with the solar line.
Even better, what are they called? The amp clamps.
Yeah.
The amp clamps.
Sense,
so,
or some of those, right? Sense, isn't that?
No, well, you can actually. So, for my dryer solution, it's basically just you put it around one leg of the power and it measures how much amp is coming through there. Mm. So, when the dryer's on, you can get them at the handles different amounts, but when the dryer's on and it goes past this many amps, it now notifies me that my dryer's on.
Okay.
And then when it drops,
it's Wi-Fi.
No, you can. So I have it built into basically that piece is just two wires coming in. It's almost just like a switch, you know, it opens, closes. You can get them as normally open or normally closed. I have it wired into like a Z-Wave. It was a contact sensor, but it had inputs into it. So it was battery powered.
Got it.
You know, totally, like, because I didn't have power in my dryer area for this. And yeah, this would totally do what you want. You just want to find how many amps before it triggers.
Okay.
And then get one to the right size.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of have one of those. It's in line, you know, for the generator. So the generator inlet that's coming in, it's wrapped around that big thick cable.
Yeah.
And then it only comes on and it's wired into a just the black and red on the generator side. So it won't run if there's no power, But as soon as the generator comes on, it feeds the monitor, and then it monitors the power coming in and tells me what kind of watts and volts and amps that I'm pulling off that. So that's kind of helpful. Okay. Well, I got some options. Anyways, it sounds like it. Listen, to be honest, I was super, I was bummed out on Sunday. Like I can't believe. So I went on to Reddit to like, hey, have others, actually the Blue Eddy forum on Reddit is pretty good. And actually Blue Eddy's forums are pretty good.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, no, doesn't work that way. I was so disappointed. I was like, why don't, you know, I'm just going to return everything. This was dumb. Why did I do this? And then I got thinking, you know, along these lines, and I'm like, well, I'm talking to Gavin on Thursday. Let me see what my home assistant options are on that. And maybe, do you think, when you think about your, let's talk about your pool pump, because that's outside all the time. That, yes. Those things pull, those draw a little bit of power.
You ever it thought might about, be too much power.
You think so? What do you think it runs? 1200 watts maybe?
I could look it up right now on my phone.
Is it 240 or 120?
240, I think. So I think it may be pulling a bit too much. Because I have the Emporia View.
Okay.
Right. And that monitors, I have one on every leg out of my panel. And I can tell you right now, what's this? 1.446. I guess that's kilowatts. That is showing me that
1400 watts.
Yeah, is what my pool pump is pulling right now.
Yeah. You need four 400 watt panels to run
that pump. Yeah.
You could do it. Yeah, you know, there's some space out. The thing about it though, right? You really want your pump running at night. Right?
I like it during the day.
So you think you'd be comfortable saying whenever the sun is up, the pump will run, but if the sun is down or it's cloudy, it's okay if the pump doesn't run.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that during the day. Power is free. I'm not going to complain if it doesn't cost me anything to run it during the day, right? Yeah.
Well, it's not that it doesn't cost you anything. It's because you're going to put, you know, you're going to put a little four 400 watt panels if you buy them new. You know, at $1 a watt, you're $1,600. You can get them a little bit cheaper than that if you buy used. Sometimes you get them for 25 or 30 cents a watt.
$1,600? I don't think I use that much power.
No. Yeah. Well, this is the thing, right?
You know, you do the math. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the thing. You know, you could probably on the cheap do that for $800, maybe $600. It takes a couple years to recoup that cost back. You know, part of going solar for me was just test. Like I wanted to know more about it. You know, I was like, yeah, I'm probably going to use this. I'm not going to power my house off of for sure. But I wanted to be smarter about it than I am. Right. And so, so far so good. I mean, I'm learning a ton on the project. Well, okay. I'll give that a spin. John had said, he had to take off, but he did say, listen to the show last week. That's ready to go out and copy your setup. Just because it's a fun project, right? It's a really good thing. I didn't live close to that. We don't live close to each other. Who knows what I'd end up buying? Yeah, that's probably true, John. But I wanted to be real clear about that. Hopefully, I'm sure nobody went out and bought that stuff. But those panels are $99 again, so I might buy two more.
See, that's the thing, they rope you in.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Well. It's been a good trial and there's still some more work to do on it. And actually this weekend may move the panels. I've had them out front. I may move them to the back this weekend and just get that done.
So that's always been my question with these panels is where did you mount them? Like I don't want to put anything on the roof, right? No, do you just have them on the lawn or?
Well, I have a patio or I have a porch out front and it's got a really thick railing around it. You know, I've got it set. The railings were 8-inch. You know, 2x8s basically. Yeah. And so I just put mine, clamped them. I used just regular clamps and just clamped them to the top of the post. They get full sun that way. They're not optimized to the right angle, but I wasn't trying to do that yet. I was trying to see where's the right place to go. I need to do some more measuring of sun time out front and then wattage, you know, even with those sitting straight up, they were, you know, by 6, they had sun, but they were 25%, you know? And so you kind of go, what's the right, you know, I was getting sun on them about 10 and it was ending about four for the most part. So 6 hours of sun on those things. Do I want them there or do I want them in the back? And I kind of need help. I kind of need to move them back there at some point. And then the sun starts a lot earlier there. It starts maybe at 9, I should say a lot, hour earlier, but it's done at 4.
Yeah.
So then you start thinking maybe one set should be out front, one set should be in the back, right? Because then you're taking advantage of
a longer day.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. This is why I bought these things. So
maybe you should go one up and put them on a follow the sun, get a little motor so it follows the sun around, you know? Like,
yeah,
come on, Jim, we got to think.
I know. I got it. Gavin, maybe you can, you know, if you see anything like that in the home automation space, it would be interesting, you know, again, every dollar you put into this, you're never going to get back for the most part, right? But it would be interesting to put these things on a tilt, on a two axis, right? So it tilts both side to side and then up and down so that you can get the right, you know, you get the right angle of the sun and then follow the sun over the course of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. The question would be, would that ever pay off?
No.
Well, yeah. In you wouldn't definitely not want to do it on a panel by panel basis, right? Because you'd have to buy one of those for every panel if you had them going individually. So now you're putting the panels together and you need a bigger one to move multiple panels, right?
I'll let you think about it.
Okay. Well, that's what I bought them for.
Yes.
That's what I bought them for. So anyways, appreciate you guys putting up with that. Hey, you've got some PoE controllers for Zigbee and Z-Wave you want to talk about. Bring that in.
Yeah, so this again is another Home Assistant thing. If you're familiar, well, if you're a user of Home Assistant, more than likely you have a USB Z-Wave controller or a Zigbee Z-Wave controller, and you plugged it into your setup, and you know wherever your setup is pretty much where this comes from, where the controller sits. So in my house, my server actually sits in the basement in a far corner, and that's where the antennas sit, right? And it does affect range, like. You know, you're in the furthest part of the house, so now your further devices start using more mesh and stuff like that. But what I did was I got a couple of PoE controllers. One of them is from a company called SM Lite, and they make Zigbee controllers. Zigbee and Thread combination controllers. So I got that. And with PoE now, I can put this controller anywhere in my house, right? And I can put it in the center of my house. So now all the Zigbee devices have a really good connection to it, right? And they utilize less of the mesh. They talk to it more directly. You know, you get better speeds, better reception. Devices don't fall off. This one works really well. I know this company, SM Lite, is coming out. They're working on a Zigbee and Z-Wave version of it, which when that gets released, I'm going to grab for sure. And then I'll migrate everything to that and then centralize it. But it's got some really cool features that I never thought of until I got the device. And one of them is you can install a VPN on it. and think about it. So I think TJ from our show, you know, the first thing he thought of is I can put this at my office. Like he has a little office away from his home and put it on PoE and install the VPN. And then now Home Assistant connects to it. It connects to his Home Assistant back home.
Okay.
So now he can put devices in his office and control them all through the central, his same Home Assistant instance. He doesn't need another box there, another Home Assistant, nothing like that. Like that was a really great use. I was thinking maybe I could put some smart devices in my mom's house to help her with certain things, and I can control them and manage them and everything like that as needed. She doesn't have to worry about it, and all I gotta do is plug this in and have it powered. It does do PoE, but I think it also has USB-C.
A USB-C plug on the side.
Yeah.
I was looking like, what would that be for? That's for power?
Basically? That's also for power. If you don't have PoE, you could still buy it with USB-C and it will use Wi-Fi to connect back to Home Assistant.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Or just regular Ethernet. A regular Ethernet, and then you would power it with that. Yeah, okay.
Correct. So I love this device. Like I've totally switched over to it. It works great. I've been running for a number of months now. And like I said, when they release their Z-Wave version, I'll probably grab that one and just have it all in one device, Zigbee, Z-Wave. It also does Thread, all in one device.
What's the retail on this?
I am not exactly sure. I see you have it up on your screen right now. So
we can find it on Amazon here. This is Amazon US, $65.
Well, that's for the one confusing part about it is they have like 10 different models. Okay. For the average user, they're all the same thing. The dual antenna one also does matter in thread though. So that one might entice a few people.
Is this the right one?
Yes.
SL, $100. Let's say $91.
Yeah. And I think cool. the developer is out of the Ukraine.
Says out of stock.
Yeah. You can order from his website. I think he's based out of the Ukraine. Really nice guy.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of cool.
Yep. And then I also have one for Z-Wave. So there's another person. The website is TubesZB, right? And they make also like a dual radio kit. So it does Zigbee and Z-Wave. The thing I like, I use this one basically for Z-Wave. And I like it because it uses the Zoos Z-Wave module on this one. And I'm a big fan of Zoos in the Z-Wave space. They're a big player. They're certified to work with Home Assistant, you know, everything like that. So I was happy when I saw that because it's an officially supported chip that uses Z-Wave 800, long range, et cetera, et cetera. But this is another company that makes a similar thing, really affordable. I mean, I think it's less than $100 for them. And they have a lot of products. The thing with this one is TubeZB will, when you get it, it will feel more like a kit that you put together, you know, like he'll give you a boards and, you know, you screw everything in. It's a 3D printed case where the SM Lite felt like a finished product, right? Between their antennas and their casing and everything. Mm-hmm. But in terms of functionality, same concept, PoE, you put it, plug it in anywhere in your house. You can centralize it and take advantage of, you know, everything, Z-Wave long range, etc. It's great product.
And same price point, $100
yep.
or so. It kind of reminds me like the Raspberry Pi, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they're based off stuff like that, yes.
Yeah. Open the kit, throw that in there. You know, or do whatever. You can swap out components if you wanted. Is this one, could you swap out? Could you add upgrade on this? Or is it fairly fixed?
It looks like you can play around with it if you really wanted to and swap out some stuff, but I didn't look that far into it. He kind of gives it to you as is, but it's very well documented what the ports are, etc. So if you really wanted to break it, you could go ahead and do it. You know, and these are great for people that like to run. I run Home Assistant in a VM on my server, right? That way it backs up nicely. It's just the way I like to run. I can give as much power as I want, right? Now I don't have to fight with passing the USB devices through to that VM, right? Because that was always a challenge. And, you know, you can reboot your server or a device just drops off the USB. Now it doesn't worry about any of that. It connects to it over Ethernet and it's giving me no problems.
Yeah. Of those, when you think about, you know, the various protocols of Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, Zigbee, Z-Wave, what's your preferred? Do you have a preferred or are there so many different ways to do it? You just make them all available on your server and then just connect to whatever they're making it. I don't know. Thoughts on that?
All of them. I have Z-Wave, I have Bluetooth, I have Zigbee, I have Thread, Matter over Thread, I have, you know, and the reason why I have all of them is you always find a product you want. And if you go all Zigbee, you're going to find a product you want that's Z-Wave or Matter only. You know, if you go to Matter, you're going to find it doesn't have a feature you want that's in Zigbee and Z-Wave, right? So I like to mix it up and I like to try and mix it up nicely. And the reason why is because then it strengthens my mesh for all of them. Like if I only had two Zigbee devices, but the rest of my house was all Z-Wave, that those two devices might have trouble communicating because I don't have a mesh. Right. So I try and mix it up a little bit, but most of my devices, about 100 of my devices are Z-Wave. So I'm more tailored towards that. And that's just because I like uniformity too. So all my switches are all Z-Wave.
Right. Are they all mesh in that sense? Are like all Zigbee and Z-Wave run on a mesh or does it depend?
They run, they're all mesh technologies. However, with the newer Z-Wave, you'll hear them talk about Z-Wave 800 long range.
Yeah.
And that's basically a hub and spoke setup. Okay. So you have the hub and everything connects directly to the hub. The only difference is in that mode, devices can communicate at much further distances, like really far. That's the marketing. I had a Z-Wave long range device. I threw it in the furthest corner of my backyard, which really isn't that far from the hub, and it couldn't see it at all. Right. It was dropping off. So I was like, I'm not a fan of the Z-Wave long range. And I have other Z-Wave devices out there, and they use the mesh and they got back to my hub just fine.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it all depends on your use case. I mean, if you're able to centralize the antenna, that will help with the long range, because now they don't have to scream as far to get to each other.
Yeah. And I imagine chipset matters sometimes too, matters sometimes too. And like, you know, for the longest time I had to go out to the shed, I take a laptop with me, and getting the Wi-Fi back from the house, I put some range extenders out there, tried a whole bunch of gyrations, and then I just changed laptops. And not all Wi-Fi equipment on laptops is created equally. And the new laptop was like, oh yeah, I can see that Wi-Fi all the way in your house just fine. Like, yes. And here I'd been doing all these gyrations on, you know, and, you know, I'm a big believer in reusing equipment whenever I can, right? Sometimes that bites me. It bit me then. And now it's, you know, I don't even think about, you know, I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll run a cable out there. It's impossibly far. Maybe I need to get one of those Wi-Fi extenders that I put out on the deck kind of thing, run wire to it. All I really needed was a better laptop, right? So good, yeah. Good. Sometimes chipsets matter, right? Yeah. In what you're doing. So, hey, let's talk a little bit about, you've got the next thing you wanted to talk about is dimmer switches. And it seems like, Gavin, in the world of switches, these are changing all the time, right? And I don't know. That's what it feels like to me. Is that an accurate? And then why do you like this one?
In the switch world, yeah. I wouldn't say they're changing all the time. People try to add their own little twist. I mean, a switch is a switch.
Yeah.
And for the most part, they all do the same basic thing, but every company likes to add their own little flair to it or something like that. But in the end, it's still a basic switch. But Innovelli is my switch of my preferred switch in my house. All my switches are Innovelli. I've replaced every switch in my house, and they're known for that blue bar at the side. On their older switches, it was just, you know, if it was that's the dimmer style, and the older ones, if it was just a switch, it would be a little smaller bar at the bottom. But what they've come out with is the Red Series Z-Wave millimeter wave switch. And what this is it actually has a millimeter wave sensor built into the switch. And you can now create automations off of that. And, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's motion. It's more occupancy sensing. So
how do you define the difference between those two?
Motion sensing to me is if something moves. Right. So it will say something moved in this room. Occupancy sensing is saying there's something still in this room.
Okay.
Right. And it can detect it. Like with millimeter wave, the big hype about it is even if you're sitting still, it can detect the minute breath.
Yeah. Cause that's always the problem on these sensors, right? As you be in your office, this happens in the office all the time. You're working on something, you're not moving very much, light goes off. Then you do this whole hand waving thing, right, to get it to come back on. This senses more like when you're in there. How does it know is it heat or is it what's it based off of? How does it
isn't IR based off heat? Millimeter wave, I think, is based off of waveforms. I think it's sending out some kind of waveform and picking. I've never really looked into the technology, and it also seems to be pretty new. It's also changing a lot. So different sensors are coming out with different, I guess, I don't know if they're frequencies or hertz or something like that. So they'll be like one's a 24 megahertz frequency versus a 5 megahertz frequency. And that just increases the sensitivity, I believe. So that this space is pretty new, but it's going to start getting very popular.
Yeah. $100 a switch though, Gavin.
It gets $100. Expensive. It's not cheap. It's not cheap, but it's got a lux sensor built into there too.
Which means what?
Which is the brightness. So you can tell the brightness of the room. Okay. So you can have some automations. But it's a very powerful switch in terms of all the automations you can do with it. And all the things it can do through the settings. Like a lot, some of the things, if you want, you don't even need Home Assistant for. It's actually built into the Switch. You know, having it automatically turn on and off the lights based on presence, you know, and time of day. Those are actually settings on the Switch itself, right? So it's almost like there's too many settings sometimes when I look at it.
You know, it may be a Switch, realistically, you have in three places.
Like, yes.
Family rooms. Yeah. Oh, well, I didn't think about the bathroom. Maybe. Yeah. Well, yeah. 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 You know, that'd be a good place to have it.
I've been playing around with two of them, and I have one in my office here and I have one in my bathroom. Right. And the one in my bathroom will automatically turn on and off the lights when I walk into the bathroom. And I've gotten used to that. When I didn't have turned it off, I used to walk in there and forget to turn on the light.
Yeah.
Right. So now I don't even think about it, and the light comes on and the light comes off. And I have other parameters around it, like it only do it if my blinds are closed or stuff like that. Right.
Right.
So they work pretty well. One drawback you have to take into consideration is the placement in the room. Sometimes the light where the light switches isn't the best placement for a motion or a millimeter wave sensor. Right. Like some people have the Switch facing almost like outside the room again, right?
Yeah.
So you gotta take that into consideration. But if you want a millimeter wave sensor, one of my favorites is the Aquara FP2. I have that also in my office I was playing with, but it's one of my favorites in terms of it's a wired one. That's the only downside to it, but it's my favorite in terms of features and reliability. Like on their app, you actually can draw out your room and then you draw out your desk and then say, okay, only activate if I'm sitting at my desk.
Oh, wow.
Or in my living room, only activate this lamp when I sit in this chair, you know, and you actually have a visual representation of it. You can look at the map and it will show you all the people in the room walking around. I think it tracks up to 5 people.
Wow.
And it will show you them moving around on the map. So it's a really cool. That one is, again, another $100 device, but you only need a couple of them.
Could it be assigned to two lights? So like if I come in the room and go left, I want you to turn the overhead light on. If I go in the room and turn right, turn on, you know, you have a door behind you. Let's pretend that's a closet. And when I go to open the closet door, I want it to turn on a closet light. Can they do that with one switch?
The Innovelli one, no, you couldn't automate. I know what you're thinking. That would be more with something you do with the Aquara FP2 sensor.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So you could say if they sit in this chair, if someone's sitting in this chair, turn on the lights based on the chair they're sitting in, and it will track it like that. With the Innovelli one, I don't think it does individual reporting. I think they were playing around with it, but it got a little too complicated. I think they pulled some of those things. Technically, it can track more than one person. But it gets hard to, how do you build that into options? How do you build that into Home Assistant? It gets a little more complicated. How does a user interact and set this up? You almost need like an app to configure it as well.
Yeah, you do.
Right.
Yeah. You do. Yeah. I just thinking if you can draw, you know, I was thinking about, you know, I've got the Oculus, headset and you turn that thing on and then it says, draw around you so it knows where you're at so it can do some things. And I thought, boy, this would be handy because oftentimes the closet light is the hardest one to get. You know, where do you put the switch? Do you want the switch for that? You know, if you had a sensor that was on the ceiling coming down and you drew a thing around the desk and then drew the door and said, when I go to this door, just turn that light on.
Yeah, you
know, type thing. So
for a closet door, I just use a contact sensor, but same type of idea. There are some devices, millimeter wave sensors, that you can actually mount like a pot light.
Yeah.
Right. And it will shoot down over that door. So as soon as you walk into that range, you can have it turn on lights.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Yeah. It's $100 a little stiff for a
Switch. It is. They got more expensive. I have the original Red Series and they weren't that expensive. But, you know, like
why red? That seems unusual. Is it just a fashion? They actually have reds. No, they I was looking on the site and they have the color red. As a, is that just because they were called red before, or
they have multiple paddles. You can replace the paddle with whatever color. They have a bunch of colors that you can actually replace it. They actually come in white, but they call it the red series for Z-Wave, blue series for Zigbee, and white series for their Matter switches. Sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just saw it on the site in red. You know, you can, they got the color palette, gray, black, brown, ivory, you know, what you expect, almond, light almond. Then they got a red one. And it's like,
who has red? Well, I don't know. Somebody does.
It's the love room or whatever, but okay. Maybe. That sounds good. Anyways. Hey, last time you were on the show, you had just got it started right with your mower.
Yes.
Right. And, you know, you're like, I asked, like, what do you think? And you were like, well, I haven't really used it yet. So you're back. Talk about your mower. You've been doing it for a couple months now. What do you think?
Yeah.
Tell us what you got. Tell us what you got. And then tell us what you got.
I have the Navimo i110 series right now. And I've been running it since the spring, and I've been doing a little experiment. So my front lawn, I do myself. So I've been out there mowing it and doing myself. And my back lawn, I let this lawnmower go and do it. Now, the only other thing I did with my back lawn too is I threw down a couple years ago, I threw down this RTF seed, right? And the people I bought it from, a local seed farm, they said, it's going to take about 2 years for this to grow in. But when it does, it's very, you know, you don't have to water it often. You can walk on it. Any bare patches in your lawn, it's going to fill it in significantly, right? And they're like, it's going to look great. So, you know, I put it down in 2003. 2004 season, I was looking at my backyard lawn. I was like, it's very patchy. You know, like, is this thing really working? Is it really going to take 2 years, right? And I was like getting a little down on it, but I was like, I'll deal with it next year. This year came up spring. All the grass came out of nowhere and it filled in all the gaps and it thickened up and went super green.
What's the name of the grass again?
Yeah, I got it from Visser's Seed Farm. Okay. V-I-S-S-E-R-S.
Okay.
Sod Farm, sorry. And they're kind of close by to me. But they have the it's called RTF what was it called specifically? I'd have to look up the exact
RTF water saver sod.
Yeah. Well, not the sod, but the seed.
No, the seed, yeah. But yeah, it's the same. Yeah. They just grow it for you and then they put the sod down, right?
Yeah. Okay. So on top of that, what I did is I've also been using this mower. And I have it set up so I don't program it to go on a schedule because I have a dog I want to clean up before, et cetera, et cetera. But every couple of days, you know, I'll go out there and I just say, hey, A-lady, mow the lawn. And it goes and this thing comes out, drives around the pool, goes and starts cutting the lawn. And the fact that I've been like, you're not fully cutting the lawn, but you're trimming the lawn. You know, the fact that it trims the lawn so often, the lawn's been the healthiest I've ever seen it back there, right? Like it just drops the trimmings into the lawn, it goes away. It's beautiful. And it does save time. It saves me time not having to do this, right? Like, yes, I have to go trim. Yes, I manage it by telling it when to go. But that time is insignificant to actually pushing a mower.
Have you cut your trimming time down? Like in the sense that do you do it less often because you're not out there as much? Like this season, I've only been trimming every third mow. And it's actually my grass is in better shape because I was finding with the trimmer, I was just gouging areas out, you know, making mistakes. You'd gouge it down to the ground and I kind of just let it go. And it's been way like it's filling in now in those areas I was kind of hyper trimming. And then now I'm a little more careful. Like now that I'm letting it grow, I'm a little more careful when I'm trimming and it's better. It's just better.
Yeah. It's been a weird year. Like when it comes to trimming, I only trim the back when I eventually mow the front. So every week or two, when I finally go out and mow the front, my front looks nothing like the back does. Right. And it's night and day difference. You can see the difference, how green the grass in the back is versus my grass in the front. So this
really,
yes. And the part that shocks me so much is the amount of effort I put in to get it that green in the backyard wasn't significant. Like, I wasn't expecting this. I was like, man, I messed this up. Last year, I thought I messed it all up. Yeah. I thought, you know, I should have done this. I should have done that. No, I did not. It came in, and I'm crazy. Shocked. Yes. So,
do you think we're getting more rain this year, though, than you got last year? Just to be honest, like, this has been a wet year, right?
Yeah.
For us, anyways.
In the beginning of the summer, yes, we were getting rain like every day. Lately, last number of weeks, we've just been getting hit with heat, little rain. But I think come fall, we're going to get a lot of rain again, and that will be perfect for me to throw it on the seat in the front and do everything I want to do out there.
So you're going to put the RTF. Did you put the RTF out front as well?
Not yet. No, okay. I want to see how it works first. If it works, the sad part is it took 2 years. So next year I'm going to have to accept the fact, but it was worth it. My backyard's looking beautiful.
Yeah. Isn't that nice? I have Zoysia in our front. It's full sun. And so that Zoysia grass, which is a Bermuda type meant for the southern states, like, and up here it dies. I mean, it goes dormant pretty fast. So by November it's brown, doesn't get green till like May, so I'm willing to put up with that. But in the summer, it's a carpet, it's a you know. And last year we had some spots, and this year it's been raining, you know, every third day, and it's lush and green. Like, I could go sleep on it. It's so awesome. The RTF, it says here on the website, an advanced generation of turf type tall fescue, say that 10 times fast, that produces a thick rhizome-based root system, right? Rhizomes are they spread out from the base, that sports unparalleled, this is what you're seeing right now, unparalleled thick, even turf. In fact, RTF is so distinctly advanced from all other tall fescue generations that it's been awarded a patent. They got a patent. Good thing that patent's in Canada, not in the United States. Apparently, we're going to start charging for patents here in the United States. The significance to professional turf managers is RTF's ability to self-repair. This is what you saw, right? The new RTF rhizome technology will fill in damaged bare spots and produce more attractive turf area. The rhizome nature of RTF is similar to Kentucky bluegrass. However, unlike Kentucky bluegrass, RTF will thrive in the transition zone, climate, and other tall fescue turf regions. There you go. Now, you said this, you got to be patient, right? You got to throw it down, and you can, it's not, did you aerate, or when you threw the seed down, did you aerate, or did you just, in the fall, did you just toss it out there? What did you do to put the seed down? Do you remember?
Usually I get aerating, but the guys never go in the back. They only aerate the front. So technically the back I didn't aerate. I did throw down some soil. So I just had some bags of soil. And I mainly did it because I wanted to level some of the ground out there. So I threw down some soil, and I used a leveling rake. But I threw the seeds down over top of it or underneath it, and then I threw the soil on top of it. But I didn't really, like, some people are like, grind up the ground and do this and do that. I didn't really do any, like, the amount of work I put into this was shocking. And yes, that's what they said was the reason why it will take so long before it comes up is because it grows, the roots will grow first. And then once they get a thick root system, then it'll shoot upwards. And that's what they said you'll see the second year.
Yeah.
So I'm shocked, but I'm going back to buy a couple bags. It's not cheap, but it's worth it.
Can you see the rhizome? Like, it's just the bare spots. I'm always interested. Like with Zoysia, the bare spots are there in the spring, and then they just slowly and you can almost see it sends out little shoots. And you'll see it because it's going to sun, right? So the bare spots naturally have the most sun, and it shoots them across and another one across, and then it slowly starts coming in. And then you're like, oh, that spot's gone, you know? And the poor weeds, you're probably going to see this too. The poor weeds, they try to grow up. To get sun, they go up over the top. And then, of course, your robot lawnmower, they don't get up for a day to chop them off.
Yeah. That's right? Another thing is my backyard, I had weeds back there before I did all this. The weeds were fighting back there to get in. They're all gone. There's a couple trying to squeeze in around the edges and stuff, but they're all pretty much gone. The grass is holding them out. So I can't wait to try this in the front.
Nice. Okay. That'll be good. You have to update us on that. Of course, you got water sensors out there on the front, right?
Yep.
Do you do... You have water sensors in the back as well?
Yes, or? I do. Yeah, okay. The moisture sensors. And I just saw that in Canada now, as we were talking before, the Ecowit stuff, they now have their – so they released a new soil moisture sensor, the WH51L. And the difference with this one is the soil sensor is on like a wire now. So you can put it in the ground, put the wire under the ground, and then the sensor, the head of the sensor, you can mount to like your fence post or something at the side. Nice. So now it's lawnmower friendly, right? So where the other sensors they have are not lawnmower friendly, right? No. So I'm going to go pick up a few of these.
How much are they?
61 Canadian. I don't know what tariffs, etc., how much in the US, but you can get them off Amazon. And
are they made here in the US or are they Chinese?
Yes. I believe they're made in the US. Okay. It's a US company, so I hope.
Apparently, I know a lot 61. Apparently, a lot of things are going to be made here in the United States in the future.
Soon, yeah.
We'll see how well that works.
Yeah. But I like these because they communicate back to their little hub using RF, and they go a long distance.
Oh,
right. Okay. So it's really
so good. You have to have a hub, and then does the hub have a limit on the number of sensors that you can?
You don't really have to have the hub. I mean, you can if you had a SDR antenna on your home assistant, you can make it go back in directly that way. Yeah. But the hub makes it so much better; it does all the translations and everything for you. Yeah. They that's keep so increasing. Hard. It's amazing. All their devices are relatively cheap.
Okay.
Right. Like the weather station gateway of $51 for that one. But the one I have is not too expensive.
Tell me the name again.
And Ecowit. Ecowit.
Ecowit. We've talked about that before.
Yeah. Like I have the Wi-Fi gateway, and it looks like it's $60 Canadian as well.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And they have a whole bunch of devices you could add.
They do. Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, they got a smart ball valve water timer.
You got more down there than I see up here. So okay. Right. You're going to make me a little jealous.
They have quite a few weather stations in there. I think you can get a lot of these on Amazon. But
yeah.
Tell me again the mower you got. And is it a keeper, you think?
I'll keep it because I have it, right?
They gave it to you, right?
It's a really good mower. Their software is really good. I'm really happy with the mower. The one thing I'm waiting on in the mower space is the use of LiDAR, right? And if you're thinking about getting a mower, honestly, I would wait until this LiDAR comes out. Because right now with the mowers, they're all using GPS. So you got to put a GPS. You got to make sure you get nice view of the sky with satellites. And, you know, you can't, your mower can end up somewhere because the little thing shifted a little, you know, stuff like that, right? Yeah. With the LiDAR, no antennas, no nothing. The first one I saw was, I think it was Ecovacs. They have the GOAT. Right. And it's all LiDAR based, and every review I've seen about it has been great. The only problem is because it's one of the first, it's the price difference is huge too. Right. So I'm not looking at that yet.
I don't know, to be honest with you. So Dave Hamilton, we had him on about 4 or 5 weeks ago. I think he got that Ecovacs GOAT. And to be honest with you, I mean, listen, I'm looking at a Yarbo. They're $5,000.
Right? Yes.
Okay. Now with the Yarbo, you can mow and blow snow and they have a trimmer. And I mean, like it's an advanced robot, right? But the Ecovacs GOAT 1000 right now, $850, which isn't terrible, right?
But keep in mind the 1000 series, I think are all GPS based. You have to look at the A3000, I think it is.
Okay. All right. So we have to be careful. Like there may be some Ecovac. And I think the one Dave had was LiDAR because I think he was talking about how good that was.
Yes.
And so look, maybe this one. That's $1,500. This is the no wire, an acre, full band, iVision robot. Is it the iVision? Is the LiDAR they're calling iVision? Let's see.
I'm not sure if they refer. I just know the model number. The only LiDAR one they have is the A3000 as far as I know right now.
Okay.
All the others are RTK, I believe.
This one's RTK. Yeah.
So you got to find, if you look for, I have to actually go.
RTK sounds like what they were talking about on Looper. Did you ever watch Looper with that movie Loopers? Is it Loopers? Looper with, I can't remember the names of those guys now. Bruce Willis and.
Yes.
I think the thing that it reminds me that the special mutation was, I think was called like RTK or something like that. Sounds like it. All right. But
I expect more mowers will be coming with LiDAR eventually, so they're not going to be dependent on this stuff. And I think that's what I would wait on.
Really?
Yes.
So that's that. You think that'll lock it up for the most part as far as accuracy and mapping and all those things?
Yeah, and just installation and convenience for people. You know, you don't have to run a wire. The problem with the current setup is, to get that wire to a spot where it can see the satellites, I had to find a way to like not go across the lawn. And, you know, it's not close to the house. You can't put it close to the house. You can't put it under trees. You can't do this. So once they get the LiDAR, now we're going to start seeing much easier setup.
Yeah, that is. Okay. So the A3000 is $3,000.
$3,000
equals $3,000. So yeah, I'd have a hard time.
But from what I'm hearing, some other companies are going to be releasing their LiDAR versions. Now, whether they announce it at IFA or CES, just keep an eye out for it. I think that's the next step.
Okay. Well, you heard it here. And again, tell me again what you got. What's the mower brand?
It's Navimo I110i.
Okay.
It's owned by Segway.
Okay. Oh, that's right. You said Segway earlier. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I almost pulled the trigger. It's been so hot this year. I was like, there's a couple times I'm like, oh, if I just had a freaking mower, you know, I could be sitting on my porch, bust out. We'll see you. Thanks for coming out. I could be sitting on my porch watching this thing mow instead of sweating
I think the happiest person to have one of these is, the co-host on Home Tech FM, Seth. Right. He measures the area of his home in acres. I measure mine in square feet.
Yeah.
He measures the acres, but he has two of them. I don't know how he got two of them. And he just lets them go do his thing. And his lawn has been looking great from the pictures I've seen. He just, the problem is by the time they're done, they have to start back up again.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So, but he just leaves them going. Every now and then he gets a notification that one's stuck or he has to rescue one off the road. But, you know, where he's living, it's fine. You know, the neighbors will call him and say, hey, he got out again. Yep. But he loves it. He said in this hot weather, he hasn't had to go out there and they're doing their job.
I think they're actually better for the grass. They're not as heavy. They don't create the marks that a heavy mower does.
They do different directions.
They do different directions.
Yep.
I think
they're quiet.
How long do you think yours will last for? I mean, you think you get 3 to 5 seasons out of it? Or do you think, it's out there all the time, rain, snow, dark of night, like the post office?
Well, not snow. The wintertime, you bring them back in. But I know what you mean. I think the weakest part, the part that probably won't last the longest, I mean, other than the blades, which you have to replace every, however, mows or probably a couple times a season, the battery may be the problem. Like, I don't know how long the battery, charge, discharge, how many cycles it has. I think that will determine how many years you get out of it and whether or not you can replace the battery yourself. I don't think on mine it's easy replacement. You can replace it, but I don't think it's an easy replacement. Where on some others, they actually have an easier replacement of the battery. You can buy a new battery and put it in, and you're back in business. There's not many parts to it. It's just a little disc that spins with these little blades on the end, and that's all it really is.
Yeah. Well, you'd almost wonder if they go the way of power tools, where the batteries would be separate, and you snap them in, and you can swap them out if you need to. You know, that wouldn't be too bad. They're expensive.
But. Don't give DeWalt the idea, please. these batteries are like getting expensive. I almost buy a kit on sale just to get the battery, not for the tool, but it's cheaper to buy the kit because I get the free battery with it. Yeah, exactly.
Buy it for the battery.
Yes.
Yeah, no, right on. They've got apparently there's one battery manufacturer that's making all those batteries for all those companies. And I think I heard the other day, it's Milwaukee. So the Milwaukee brand owns the patent on all the cells that go in those. Then the other thing you got to watch out, that could be wrong, but I think that's what I heard. Then the other thing you got to be careful of, especially like on eBay, you know, they'll promote these DeWalt, you know, like $20. It's totally fake. Yes. Like you got to be really, really careful on those batteries if it's too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true, right? From that standpoint. So there's a big, because of the batteries are so expensive, they didn't used to be that way, but because they're so expensive, there's a big underground, you know, black market for those things. It's crazy.
They got more expensive over the years, but also I find they also got bigger. My demands for them have gotten bigger with my leaf blower and stuff like that too. So I've had to get bigger batteries.
I bought a Black & Decker. I've been a Black & Decker guy. That's kind of the average guy power tool, right? Kind of thing. So I bought a Black & Decker, like 12 or 18 inch chainsaw, you know, put a 20 amp battery in there. Worked great for a while. Then they have some not hedge clippers, but it's chain driven, but you have to hold both sides. It's kind of safety chain, and you could cut smaller, you know, up to maybe 4 or 5 inches off of something, and that would work great. Both of them died within like months of each other. Like the chainsaw went first. I was, it just stopped. And then I'm, you know, click, 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 took it apart. I'm sure there's a little motor in there I could replace. I didn't. Now I really like the loppers, the clippers that have a chain inside them. I may try to fix that one. I may do some troubleshooting online to say, hey, I've got this. It's not working. Does somebody fix this before? It would be nice. You know, Kevin Schoonover was on a while. And I thought, this would be a nice one to fix if I can actually fix it. But I'm kind of losing a little faith in Black & Decker, you know, at this
point. Yeah. I had Black & Decker tools back in the days, and now I look back, they weren't the greatest tools.
But I just don't use them that much. That's the one of the things that you're like, it's not like I'm using them every day. You know, they got the chainsaw lasted me 4 years, maybe five. And the clippers lasted me 3, but I used them a lot, you know. So you're I got batteries with them, so maybe they were free with batteries.
I have one tool that I couldn't get in DeWalt, right? So, but I really wanted this tool, right? And I bought it, and it came with its own battery. But instead of going into getting a whole new battery ecosystem going in my house, I actually found a little adapter that let me plug the DeWalt batteries into it. So now I have this tool, and I still have my DeWalt battery, so I'm good with that.
Did you think those adapters are pretty, like, you know, can you go, I buy a Harbor Freight tool. Do you think there's an adapter from Harbor Freight to DeWalt?
You'd have to look it up. You'd have to look it up. I have a few tools that I have an adapter for, and I just use the DeWalt
battery. I'll have to look into that. If you know that exists, throw it in chat or on YouTube, throw it in the comments or send me an email. Jim@theaverageguy.tv. I'd love to think through that, because I think the battery ecosystem is the biggest mafia. First of all, batteries are the mafia for sure. They're running that for sure right now. And then you're like, you're like, nope, I got to buy the DeWalt tool because I'm in the DeWalt ecosystem.
Yes.
Or I'm in the Milwaukee, you know, I got a Milwaukee that for Christmas, Sarah got me a Milwaukee screwdriver. And it's really just a hand. I mean, it's not very powerful at all. It's really just meant to put screws in. Yep. Man, that thing is freaking handy.
Oh, I have one too. I have a DeWalt version, but exactly what you say. I love this thing. It's
handy. I use the heck out of that thing. So
my neighbor's a Milwaukee guy. He's got all the Milwaukee tools. I'm a DeWalt guy. I got all the DeWalt tools, and we go back and forth every now and then. But the nice part is I can compare. right? Yeah. And I can actually use his tools and compare. Yeah. And there's one brand that I say is better than the other, but you know, it's like an iPhone versus Android argument. Yeah. I don't want to get into it. You know, I don't want to get into it.
Right on. Right on. We'll have turf wars over tool manufacturers. At work, some of those companies are our clients, right? We have them as clients. And I'm like, guys, you should send me to the, when you're doing things, and I'll just talk up the tools. I'll get them all juiced up. Like, yeah, no, I use the tools all the time, right? Kind of thing.
Let's email their rep.
They haven't sent me yet. Yeah, they haven't sent me yet. So anyways, hey, as we wrap this up, Gavin, Sonos headphones, I hear nothing good about Sonos sometimes from price and complaint. I hear people complain. I know it's great sound, but you got some Sonos headphones. How have they been treating you?
So yeah, I've heard lots of complaints about these headphones, especially when they first came out. They're not cheap headphones; they're expensive headphones. Yeah, yeah. But I ended up grabbing a set of the Sonos headphones used. Well, not used; it was new. But I got off of eBay. I won the auction, and I got it for a fraction, half price. Nice. You know, and at that point, it's worth it, right? Yeah. How I use these? So I use these when I'm mowing the lawn. You know, when I go mow the front lawn, I'll throw these on. They work like just any other Bluetooth headphone. You know, they sound great. They have the noise canceling and everything. But to me, the power feature of these is being able to sit in front of the TV. You press a button, and the audio from my TV just goes to the headphones, right? And you don't disturb anybody in the house. Now, to do that, you have to almost have a Sonos soundbar on each of the TVs, which I am in the Sonos ecosystem. I have soundbars on each of my TVs, right? And from, you know, I either have a Beam or the Ray on my TVs, you know, which are not the expensive ones like the Arc, but I can sit down in front of any of the TVs. You press the button, it transfers the TV to my headphones and mutes the TV. And it knows what TV I'm sitting in front of. Right. So it's really nice because I could be down in the basement, you know, and I'm watching the TV down there and I just press the button and now it's not bothering anyone in the house, you know, late at night. And I kind of come to like them for that. Right. I mean, there's some annoyances, but I think they fixed the number of the annoyances I had in software updates. Okay. And the one thing I really wish I could have used it for was for podcasting like this. Right. They do have a USB-C cable, but the problem is there was a delay in the voice that I don't get with a regular cable. And that's the digital processing in there. That was my one thing I really wish I could have used it for. But other than that, they're great for TV.
Yeah. I'd use my Bose for that if they didn't. They still have a slight delay in them. And I'm not it's funny here at the studio here. I'm not a cans guy. I do earbuds. At work in the studio, earbuds. But in my office, I have a Audio Technica BP1, which is the headset, you know, that the it comes down, you know, it's got the handle on it, or it's got the mic on it. I love that thing. And people are always like, man, that's the biggest headset ever. I'm like, I know. That's why I like it. That's why I like it. Yeah. I can hear. I do like hearing through the cans. And I should probably, at some point, I'm going to probably go cans from the earbuds, but I don't know. I've done this for so long.
You're used to it. I can change. I like drowning out the sound. Like when I'm mowing the lawn, I like drowning out the sound so I don't hear the lawnmower.
It's and all stuff good. Like that. It's all good. I don't know what I look like at work with ears because I'm always the cans on. You take them off. I'm like, man, my head is skinny. Dang, that looks good. These headphones make my head look skinny. That's pretty good. Couple comments coming in from chat. Uncle Marv says, I must be a schmuck. All Ryobi. Here.
That's the tool I have. I have a Ryobi tool. There's an adapter.
I think Black & Decker and Ryobi. Listen, there's only like two companies that make all this stuff. I think Ryobi and the Harbor Freight stuff, I think they're all made by the same company. So Uncle Marv, no judgment here. Ryobi's got some good. It depends on the ecosystem.
If it does the job.
Yeah, for sure. Pest says, my DeWalt set needs replaced. Batteries are toast and drivers are all shot. Use Milwaukee at work, planning on switching to those. I like Milwaukee, but I like the color red. I also like yellow. So I'd struggle between the two, right? You know?
Well, if he's planning to switch to Milwaukee, go for it. I could back that one.
Okay. All right. I like it. It's a good product. They're all doing pretty well from that standpoint. There's a lot. The good news is there's a lot of competition in that space. So it's expensive. Yes, it's expensive, but there's a lot of accountability in there as well. And I think that actually plays out. Joe says, I'm on team DeWalt mostly, although I have a Milwaukee chemical sprayer. Yeah. I think we all have, we all cross over, it's not a turf war for God's sakes,
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's an argument, but me, like I said, I went out there with my DeWalt leaf blower and my neighbor walked out with his Milwaukee leaf blower and he totally just put me to shame. And I'm just like, so it's gotten to the point now where sometimes I just go over to his garage and I say, hey, can I borrow your leaf blower and your trimmer? I don't feel like going to get my batteries, and he lends it to me. But
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
We've compared it.
I like it. Brian says in chat, a good buddy of mine swears by Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Milwaukee's one of our clients. I think they're one of our clients too. So it's, it's one of those. Well, listen, in the farming space, when you think of Caterpillar or,
John Deere.
John Deere. Yeah, those. There's some bad. There's a red one too. What's the name of the red? Case. Is it Case? I think it is Case. Is it Case?
Can't remember.
It doesn't matter. They all battle over those things. Listen, I don't think brand is bad from that standpoint. No. I think sometimes the greater the competition, the better products we get out of it because they know they're in a battle, right? So I don't think that's necessarily bad. Gavin, as we wrap it up, what's coming up on hometech.fm?
Oh, well, we have some guest interviews coming up. So we interviewed Jimmy Hawkins from Automated House. Like if you search for Automated House on the socials, like Instagram and TikTok, he's got many followers. So we did an interview with him talking about all sorts of stuff, smart home related. And then we also had Wayne Kreifels. I hope I said that right. But he was the GM and VP for Segway at Navimo. North America. So he is the guy about the robot lawnmower. We've talked to him about it and we gave him our feedback and it was a great interview, because we were basically validating his sales pitches on a lot of the stuff. Cause I came back and I said, I noticed this. He's like, yes, how it handles corners, how it handles walls, So it was a great interview with that too. And we have a few other interviews in the pipe lined up, which will be great. So we've gotten a lot of interviews coming in. Keep an eye out for those on the show.
Yeah, if you like this show, you'll love hometech.fm. Much more technical, but just as fun. Those guys have a good time over there. TJ was on, a couple months ago. We'll get him back on. Seth, I don't know if we should have Seth.
Seth is jealous. He's jealous. We were actually talking. I don't know if it was on the last show we were talking about it, but we're like, Seth.
I give Seth a hard time.
The problem with Seth is he'll come on this show and he'll talk about all of his unfinished projects. Yeah. That's the joke with Seth. He'll tell you about everything he started, but you'll never hear about anything he's finished.
That's hilarious. All right. After the show, I'll reach out to both TJ and Seth. Give them a chance to come back on the show and always appreciate that. Gavin, thanks for coming out tonight. Thanks for always saying yes. Thanks for being a friend of the show. Thanks for hanging out with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the invite. And one last thing, we're going to CES in January, the whole Home Tech crew.
Oh, really?
We're going to CES in January. We've booked our B&B. It'll be the second time we ever meet up. We talk to each other all the time.
Yeah.
We video chat with each other all the time, but we're going to CES. That's in January, so there's going to be some get-togethers going on there that we're all going to be at. So, it might be a good year to go if we're going to be there.
Yeah, for sure. Are you going to do, live coverage, or are you going to do any – is it all recorded? Or
we'll probably record it all. We'll probably record it. Doing anything live from there is going to be really tough coordinating it all. So we might just go and we record the audio and video while we're there, and then we edit it all up and put it into a show and stuff. But we're going to be meeting with other creators. We're going to be meeting with a lot of these companies we talk about. So we're going to be doing a lot of stuff this year.
Good. Yeah. Brian says he's looking forward to those shows coming up. So some good ones, hometech.fm, and give that a listen. If you haven't put it on your podcast app, do that today. And Gavin, we appreciate it. Can you hang around a few minutes while I close?
Oh, for sure.
It's okay. All right. Awesome. A couple reminders on the way out. One, join us in the Discord group. actually this week, a couple big discussions. Like, so there's a gaming discussion in there. Uyghur was jumping in, and so if you want to join the Discord group, jump in. It doesn't have to be consuming. I know some folks are like, I can't do another thing. Well, this isn't one of those things you have to do. If you want to jump in and ask questions, you can. If you want to lurk, you can. theaverageguy.tv/discord and just ask to be invited. We'll put you in there. Big thanks to Christian, theaverageguy.tv platform, both web and media hosting, powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. You know that's Christian. I think he's still got plans at $10. Listen, it's the best deal on the internet. Check it out today. MapleGrovePartners.com. If you want to send me an email or you got comments on the show, I always appreciate those. And some of you, Neil, thank you. Neil's more frequent than anybody. Neil, you win the most emails from listeners award, hands down by far. I always appreciate your comments. If you want to send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. I always like hearing from you. Got a long email this week and I haven't got back to you yet. I don't want to say your name because I'm embarrassed that it took me. I still haven't gotten back to you. But I will do that here later this week. We were talking about home servers and NAS, and I got a whole long description of everything he'd done. And I was like, oh, I want to respond to this, and I didn't get it done. So I'll be emailing you back here shortly. We are live every Thursday. No, not every, but most Thursdays, 7 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern. I'm still trying to figure that out. Here at theaverageguy.tv/live. When are you guys? Do you guys do live, or is it only recorded, Gavin?
It's only recorded. We tried live at once, but it gets tough because when we get recorded, we spend like an hour sitting there talking about random
stuff.
Yeah,
I know, right on. I got you. When do you publish? When's the show coming
out? When Seth does it.
Okay,
all right. So technically, we usually record on Tuesdays, and it's supposed to be posted on Friday, but Seth always lines up a few days late. So.
That's all right, Seth. It's okay.
It gets out there.
We understand. Well, we are live every Thursday, 9 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern. And then I publish 9-ish
Fridays.
Saturdays, actually. Saturday mornings, 9-ish, somewhere in there. Kind of depends. I work on the show Friday nights, then I work on it again Saturday mornings, and I try to get it published before Ask the Podcast Coach to have it out there for you. For Joe, Pest, Brian, I didn't see Ken earlier, Bust Out joined us earlier. John was out there. Thanks for joining us live. You can too, but if you're listening to the podcast or on YouTube, thanks for listening and subscribe and follow and all that other stuff. Thanks for coming out. With that, we'll say goodbye.